Earth and Sky.
I don't think there's any reason to stop using cell phones, but I think there are concerns, and because we still don't know about heavy use and long-term use, it may be prudent to limit cell phone use, to reduce exposure by using things like handsets, and just be conscious that and aware of health in general and new information as we learn it.
You're listening to Mary McBride, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Dr. McBride is a senior scientist with the British Columbia Cancer Agency. She's co-investigator of a study released in May 2010, the largest study of its kind that looked at the risk of cancer from the use of cell phones. She spoke with Earth Sky's Jorge Salazar.
Dr. McBride, welcome to Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science.
Thank you.
Now, first off, a simple question that we've gotten from listeners, yes or no. Do cell phones cause cancer?
We don't exactly know. We're reassured that for the casual user, there is no conclusive evidence that cell phones do cause cancer. We still do not know about heavy users, long-term users, or children as users.
Now, tell me about this new study that you participated in. You were one of the co-investigators of the largest study ever done that looked at cancer risks from cell phone use. What are some of the main findings of this study?
I think there's two main findings from this study. I mean, you're right that this is the largest study of its kind, with the most number of users tracked and followed. Two things came from this study. First, that it appears that consistent with earlier epidemiologic, population-based studies, we did not see an increased risk of brain tumors, specifically glioma and meningioma, among cell phone users. However, in the top 10% of users, the users with the highest use in this study, we did get a result suggesting a 40 to 80% increase of brain tumor risk. But we do know that there are limitations, uncertainties, and potential biases in the study data that suggests that this may or may not be causally related. It's really impossible to interpret. I should mention that this result is somewhat inconsistent with, I would say, the most comprehensive of the earlier studies looking at very long-term users. And it's also inconsistent with our laboratory studies, which after many, many experiments have not been able to identify any mechanism by which radiation emissions of this type can lead to the development of cancer.
Question off the top of my head is, what is a heavy user? How was that defined when you studied this?
That's a very good question. We were looking at the use of individuals 5, 10, and more years ago now, and the patterns and duration of use were quite different then than they are now. The heaviest 10% of our users were using the phone about 640 hours total or more, which works out to be, on average, about half an hour a day over a 10-year period. So that if we were to do the study today, our heaviest users would probably be using the phone much more.
So you're saying that back when the study was done, that what was considered to be this heavy user, and as you've described, that there is a possible additional risk from being a heavy cell phone user, that was defined as only half an hour a day.
I know it seems amazing, but it is true that there's been a dramatic increase in use of cell phones over the last 10 years or more. It's probably useful to point out, too, that although more people are using them, and they're probably using them for longer, cell phone technology has also changed, so that the newer technology phones, digital versus the older analog phones, produce lower emissions of radio frequency fields. Also, practices such as using a handset or texting reduce exposure to the individual for any individual call, given that the actual main source of exposure, the cell phone antenna, is farther away from the body. There are various types of electromagnetic waves that exist, some with very low energy, such as power frequency electromagnetic fields, moving to higher energy fields, such as radio frequency fields, and even higher energy, such as microwaves or visible light. Now, all of those do not have sufficient energy to emit ions and through space. The issue changes, of course, when we move to higher energy fields, such as X-rays, which do have enough energy to move ions through space and can damage DNA, genetic material. So something similar to RF fields, radio frequency fields, would be microwaves that have somewhat higher energy, enough energy to cause heating in tissues. Certainly the question of whether radio frequency fields cause tissue heating was examined thoroughly and not shown to be a factor. A second hypothesis was involving whether or not these fields would alter cell membranes and somehow change the rate at which certain substances, say calcium versus potassium, might move in and out of cells, and whether that in turn might lead to a cell change that would lead to cancer. So those are two of several examples of questions that were asked in the lab about how radio frequency fields can change cells. Cancer is considered now, it's basically a two-stage process. The first stage being a change to the DNA, to the genetic material. That's called the initiation step. And that can occur if there is a genetic mutation, or, for example, or if something like X-rays damages the DNA. The second type of step is called a promoting step. There's various mechanisms that can promote an already susceptible cell and move it, change it further into a cancer cell. It's probably more likely that if these radio frequency fields cause cancer, it would be more at the later stages of the development, the promoting stages, which is why we think our information for users of 10 years or less is definitely relevant to the to individuals and the population. We, you know, if we're looking at a change that happens in the later stages of cancer development, it should show up in the first 10 years or so. If we're looking at an initiation step, then we might be looking at a change with longer use.
Tell us, how was this study that looked into cell phone use in cancer, how was it conducted? How do you test the cancer risk from cell phones?
This study was a case control design. So we compared individuals who had a brain tumor, the cases, with a random sample from the general population of people who had never had a diagnosis of brain tumor. And we compared the proportion of cell phone use and the intensity of cell phone use in those two groups, the brain tumor cases and the quote-unquote controls or comparison group. And if we had seen an increase in cell phone use or a higher intensity cell phone use among the cases, we would say that the two events are statistically correlated. In this kind of a study, we can't definitively show cause. We can only show a statistical relationship, which is why we need to rely on laboratory studies and an understanding of the mechanisms of how this radio frequency field or some other exposure would lead to cancer, to know whether our statistical correlation was due to the radio frequency fields or due to some other event or exposure. Observational studies of individuals are subject to several sources of variation, I would say, and that which can lead to some error in our calculations of risk, as was, I think, explained in the paper and by some who have spoken about the study. Two concerns we have about this study are the participation rate from all those eligible, and the error that's introduced through self-reporting of exposures.
Some of the critics of the study say that that this is yet another study that has no conclusive finding. What are your thoughts on that?
We did lay out a well-designed study. We cannot know what answers will come back. I think what has come back is that what we have found is that there doesn't appear to be any large risk of brain tumors from cell phone use, and there doesn't seem to be any short-term risk from cell phones. And again, given that we know there's some uncertainty in our calculations. So I think that's a very important conclusion.
You've been listening to Mary McBride, a senior scientist with the British Columbia Cancer Agency in Vancouver, Canada. To subscribe to this and other free science interview podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Deborah Bird. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.